So, there we are. Ah, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. All of you who are alive beings and half alive, and not quite sure where you fall on that rank, everyone is welcome. I'm a little bit half alive myself. I've somehow been a little bit under the weather. let's see how we go here. First of all, I really would like to thank you for appearing in the little Zoom boxes to be part of this weekend to study a text by Dogen together with everyone. Now, I say study, but perhaps a better word that would be appropriate would be contemplate. The range and complexity of Dogen's writings present a real challenge for all of us who kind of seeking to understand what he's saying. So, this weekend we will kind of wrestle with his very winding and sometimes twisting, but very beautiful language, seeing what sense we can make of it. But it's not an academic exercise. Not mostly. I hope this will be a very personal, as well as a collective exploration of Dogen's insights into our human condition, and really deepen our own insights into our own condition. I've been reading Dogen for a number of decades, and I've deeply appreciated, you know, each time I've picked up and been willing to work with his words. I find that it opens hearts and opens the vision of what it means to walk the path, to be part of the Buddhist way. So let's begin with a few words of about when Dogen wrote this text, because it's quite old, right? Dogen lived in the 1200s. So this text was written at the end of a practice period when some of the monks at his temple had dispersed to their home temples or to travel around, as was the custom at the time, in Japan. And Dogen delivered this text to those who were still at the monastery. So a little smaller group than had been there for the practice period. And he opens this text with a very traditional Buddhist gatha or verse or poem. And then he presents, as is his custom, a rather kind of drastically different interpretation of the meaning of that poem, or that gatha, and the whole text or fascicle is his exploration and encouragement for us of how to see and penetrate through the gatha to a deeper understanding and opening our vision of Buddhist practice and open our heart as well. The title in Japanese is Shōwaku Makusa, which I'm just going to break it down a little bit for you at the moment, just so you get a sense of the different ways we can actually approach even the title of this text. So, Shōwaku Makusa. Shō means various or all. Aku means evil. Something that is bad or unwholesome or wrongs. So aku, the sense of evil, has a wide range of meanings, which will explain the way some interpreters have approached this text. So that's shō aku, various evils or all unwholesome acts or activities, perhaps, wrongs. Makusa, maku means something that's prohibiting or to not do. You should not do this. You're should somehow it's prohibited. And sa means simply to do or commit with a sense of intention. So even the title can be translated in a number of ways. And each one, of course, will have a little different nuance depending on how we translate it and what those words mean for us personally. So the translation we're using for this Dogen retreat is by Kazuaki Tanahashi. And he translated it with the assistance of Mel Weitzman Roshi. Mel, who just recently died, Berkeley Zen Center abbot through much of his adult life. So they translated the Japanese title, Shōwaku Makusa, as unwholesome action. And other translations that I've found online and other places are not doing wrongs, refrain from all evil whatsoever, not doing evils. So you can get a sense of what this is like. And when we approach translation from a language as radically different as Chinese or Japanese is to the English language, I mean, there's almost no connection there historically, right? That's why it's so challenging. That we can't hang on to the individual words. We have to really get a sense of the meaning, the context, and really translate that rather than individual words or even just individual sentences directly. It takes a great skill, I think, to translate well. So Dogen wrote this particular text when he was just 40 years old. And this is before he established, for those of you who know his history, that kind of great training temple of Eihachi. So in terms of all the writings that we have of Dogen, this is one of his earlier pieces of writing. But one of his, I think, seminal or key pieces of writing as well. So, evil, unwholesome. Maybe just before we leap into looking at the text itself, we should consider, what does that mean, evil? And unfortunately, I think we could spend the whole weekend, at least, if not much longer, really thinking about and discussing this whole idea of what evil might be. Because certainly in the West, we have our own reaction and response to that word. It's not a word I use very often, and people use in different ways. But let's at least get a little bit of a sense of what it might mean in the Buddhist tradition at the time Dogen was writing. In the sutras, the main kind of important texts in the Mahayana tradition of Buddhism, and Dogen was very familiar with many of these texts. He had studied them as a young man when he became a monk. There's a very familiar list of what they call 10 unwholesome or 10 evil actions. So I think this would have been a starting point for Dogen. And they are, and they'll sound familiar to you. First of all, there's three evil physical actions of killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Then there's the four verbal evil actions of lying, slander, irresponsible speech, and then the three mental or emotional actions of greed, anger, actions of anger, hate, and ignorance, or mistaken views. So these things were labeled as aku, unwholesome, or some translators have it as evil. And they might sound familiar to many of us because they very closely parallel the bodhisattva precepts that we study at various, and we also recite on every full moon ceremony that we do. At least some, you know, variation that we of those 10. So I'd like to ask you right now to just pause for a moment and think, what does evil mean to you? How would you define it? We'll come back in a moment. I may ask you to actually to just to write a little bit down after I finish my talk. But I just wanted to kind of plant the seed before continuing on. So just ruminate it about a little bit, and we'll come back to this question. Now, I should highlight right now at the beginning, Dogen is not going to give us a definition or explanation of evil or unwholesome actions. Again, kind of typical Dogen, right? He wants us to really look closely at our own experience. So he's not going to serve something up and say, this is the truth. Perhaps he felt the issue of defining evil was just another exercise in speculation, which would not be very fruitful. And perhaps he really just wants to lead us into a deep questioning that may give us a very kind of radical and new understanding of what good and evil or wholesome and unwholesome really mean. When we look at these texts, they are not going to give us answers in the way that perhaps we may like an answer. They're not going to offer us sureties about life. What they're going to do in a good Zen tradition is encourage us to be brave, encourage us to deeply probe the truths and assumptions and fears that we hold, the hindrances that block us from fully expressing our life. And reading these, contemplating these writings by Dogen and other teachers is just, of course, part of the practice, a way to help us deepen and explore this life. But I think more importantly, to allow us to fully express our life in its completeness and wholeness. So, having that with a little bit of introduction, let's jump into the text. Now, I hope you have a copy of the text printed out, but if you don't worry at the moment. It is also on the website under this retreat event, so you can download it and at least have it on your screen, or you know, at lunchtime if you have a chance to print it out and have it. I think that would be really good. Because at some point I may ask people to read a little bit so you don't have another voice to hear, not just my voice rattling on. So, unwholesome action, and begins right away with that verse that I mentioned, the Gatha. Ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action, purify your own mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. Now this is a very, very ancient teaching from the very beginning of the Buddhist tradition. In the Dhammapada, which is a collection of verses from the very earliest teachings within the Buddhist tradition in India, this verse appears there. And this is a translation, I'm just going to read you so you get a little sense of it, by Gil Fronsdale, for those people who may be familiar with his translation of the Dhammapada. So, here's his translation from the Pali language, from the original language. Do no evil, engage in what is skillful, and purify one's mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. So this gatha has echoed and come down through time, from the time of the Buddha to Dogen's time, and it's come to us. So as I mentioned, in every full moon ceremony that we do here at Mountain Rain, we chant the Bodhisattva precepts, which include a variation of this verse. And the way we chant it is goes like, I vow to avoid all evil, I vow to do all good. I vow to save all beings. So the third line here, I vow to save all beings, is perhaps different from purify your own mind. Or is it? In the great Mahayana tradition, mind is also understood as being all-inclusive. It can be another word or a metaphor, perhaps, for the Buddha nature, the very foundation of our being, the great unity of everything. To purify one mind, to purify one's mind, is to let go of our obstructions, delusions, our unwholesome thoughts. But the Mahayana tradition understands that our complete or our true mind is the very ground of all being, is the very interconnectedness of what we habitually perceive as distinct. Many years ago, when I was a young lad, when I first studied these precepts, I kind of skipped over these three in the Bodhisattva precepts. They're called the pure precepts, because I thought, well, pretty obvious. And really, they're kind of more of an introduction, I thought at that time, to the 10 grave precepts that follow in the ceremony. I vow not to kill, I vow not to steal, etc. But I was wrong. I was wrong. These simple admonitions reverberate through all Buddhist teachings and far beyond. They are ancient. They are powerful. They challenge us to become aware of how and of how to completely live our life. And I think this is what Dogen is going to, in some ways, unpack for us. The kind of power and the meaning of these ancient teachings, because they were ancient for him as well, right? They started at the time of the Buddha. And yet, on the surface, they seem so simple, so clear and obvious. Okay. So, I'm going to read the next two passages from the text, from the Dogen text, and then I'll make some comments about that. This teaching has been authentically transmitted from earlier Buddhas to later Buddhas, of the future, as the seven original Buddhas, general precepts in the ancestral school. Later Buddhas received these precepts from earlier Buddhas. This teaching is not limited to the seven original Buddhas. It is the teaching of all Buddhas. Thoroughly investigate this point. This Dharma way of the seven original Buddhas is always the Dharma way of the seven original Buddhas. Transmitting and receiving these precepts is a mutual activity. This is the teaching of all Buddhas, the teaching, practice, enlightenment of hundreds, thousands, and myriads of Buddhas. Very poetic. Ancient teachings. Well, what good are they? It seems to me that so many people today are engrossed in today's glitter, you know, kind of seeking titillation or relief or finding value only in what is most modern. And yet here, we find Dogen carefully begins by describing for us the passing from warm hand to warm hand of this old and venerable teaching of the Buddhas. The seven Buddhas refers to the Buddhas of the past, of which Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha that we're familiar with, is the seventh. Indian Buddhist thought there were Buddhas before Shakyamuni. And there is a prediction of a Buddha that will come in the future, the Maitreya Buddha. So it kind of goes like one Buddha, two Buddhas, three Buddhas, four, five Buddhas, six Buddhas, seven Buddhas more. It goes on and on, right? Buddhas are infinite. There is no limit to Buddhas. There is no beginning and no end to this ancient teaching, Dogen tells us. And further, the teaching, the practice, and awakening also have no beginning and no end. And we should investigate this thoroughly. In the Mahayana tradition, it's understood there is no separation. Yes, there are myriad Buddhas. Sometimes in some of the later Mahayana teachings, they create these beautiful pictures for us, these images, like a Buddha on every molecule of the universe, Buddha sitting there. So our Buddha nature is not far or distant. It is completely present with us at this moment. But we'll come back to that. So let's read the next one. He says, now he's getting to kind of more into the meat of things. Unwholesome action, the manifestation of one of the three natures. The wholesome action nature, the unwholesome action nature, the neutral and the neutral nature. The unwholesome action nature is unborn, just as the wholesome action nature and neutral nature are unborn. These three natures are also undefiled and are reality. However, these three natures are manifested in various ways. In the Buddhist tradition, our actions of body, speech, and mind, our thinking in other words, are categorized as a kind of good and wholesome, unwholesome or neutral, and unwholesome or neutral, right? So those three. Good refers to those actions most appropriate or in line with the Buddha Dharma, with the teachings of the Buddha, or we could say with maybe in line with the full expression of our life, unheeded, unhindered. An example would be, for example, in the Eightfold Path, this is known as right action, right speech, right action. This is the sense, this wholesomeness or goodness is what is being referred to. So unwholesome or evil actions are those that are not in agreement with the Buddha Dharma. Actions that lead to suffering, confusion, ill will. So that's written about in the early texts. And another definition of good or wholesome action would be that which brings benefit to oneself or others, whereas unwholesome or evil actions bring suffering. And any action that doesn't bring either is considered to be a neutral action. So this is how the traditional Buddhist philosophers usually presented moral behavior, using one of those kind of two ways to describe it. So in this understanding, evil, is not defined as the antithesis of good, but that which causes harm and suffering in the present and in the future. So what I'm trying to indicate here is that from very early on, good and evil were not considered to be opposites in the same way that we often consider them to be in a Western understanding. So then Dogen goes on and says, you know, these three actions, wholesome, unwholesome, and neutral, are unborn. And what he means here is that they have no fixed quality or nature. They don't exist independently in any sense. There's no such thing as an evil action itself. And the same is true for good and neutral actions. They don't exist kind of independently. Out of the three, not one exists as something independent or fixed, and yet, of course, they manifest in various ways in our everyday life. Dogen tells us they are undefiled. And I think what he means here is that they're fundamentally not good or bad, wholesome or unwholesome. They are just things as they are. At some point, of course, we label good, bad, sacred, profane. We attach these labels to the actions or to the results. But much of the time, we heap such suffering upon ourselves, trying to make our life what we want it to be, without first seeing deeply and accepting what our life actually is at this moment. As the saying goes, you know, nobody gets out of this alive. Nobody is forever free of sickness, old age, and death. And yet, in our struggles to push away and grasp before first meeting our life as it is, we fail to see the vast and awesome truth of this life. I was thinking about this. You know, like say sickness, which often we say is unwholesome. Some people say, you know, evil. Not something we want. And yet, frequently, with illness can come gifts, can come understanding, appreciation, can be a great turning of the heart. I think this is what Dogen is getting at. You know, we need to first see clearly before we begin to label things, before we respond from a habitual way. Can you see this clearly? Let's read the next one here. This paragraph's a little bit longer. As for unwholesome action in this world and unwholesome action in other worlds are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in former times and unwholesome action in the present time are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in the Deva world and unwholesome action in the human world are sometimes same and sometimes different. Furthermore, there is a great difference between the Buddha way and the worldly realm in what is called unwholesome action, wholesome action, or neutral action. Wholesome action and unwholesome action are time. Although time is neither wholesome action nor unwholesome action. Wholesome action and unwholesome action are dharma. Although dharma is neither wholesome nor wholesome action nor unwholesome action. As dharma is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. As dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is all-inclusive. So the first part of this, I think, is not too hard to get. Unwholesome, or what we call unwholesome or evil action at one time and place, is not necessarily true in another time or place. Right? I think we can think of examples of this for sure. One that kind of occurred to me, you know, the customs that have changed over time, like children should be seen and not heard. For example, my father grew up in a very strict family, and it was considered to be really rude if children entered a conversation that adults were having. Certain activities that were welcome today no longer are appreciated or are actually considered illegal. There was a time, of course, when drinking alcohol was illegal in the States, for example, and now not. There's so many examples that we could bring forward, but I think I'd like to have Dogen kind of poetically explain this a little bit. So I'm going to read you a passage that he wrote in his Mountains and Waters Sutra, another text that he wrote. And he writes this: "In general, then, the way of seeing mountains and rivers differs according to the type of being that sees them. There are beings who see what we call water as a jeweled necklace. This does not mean, however, that they see a jeweled necklace as water. How then do we see what they consider as water? Their jeweled necklace is what we see as water. Or again, they see water as miraculous flowers, though it does not follow that they use flowers as water. Hungry ghosts see water as raging flames or as pus and blood. Dragons and fish see it as a palace or tower, or as the seven treasures, or as the Mani gem. Others see water as wood and walls, or as Dharma nature of immaculate liberation, or as the true human body, or as the physical form and mental nature. Humans see these as water, and these different ways of seeing are the conditions under which water is killed or given life." So in this passage, Dogen, I think very beautifully, says water is not some fixed object outside of the relationship between each being and what we at least tentatively call water. And if this is the case for water, how much more so for good and evil, for wholesome and unwholesome? I remember one Dharma talk I was listening to. The teacher illustrated this with dog shit, saying, you know, when we walk by some dog shit on the sidewalk, we feel perhaps some kind of disgust or repel. But if we're a little maggot happily living inside some warm dog shit and eating away, it's a treasure trove of food. It's the great pantry for us.
And if we're a dog,
we're relieved to leave it behind and smell it and find out who else was there, right? It's a form of communication. Wholesome action and unwholesome action are dharma, although dharma is neither wholesome action nor unwholesome action. As dharma is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. As dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is all-inclusive. Well, the word dharma, as I think many of us know, has many meanings and nuances. It can mean behaviors that are considered good in according with various kind of cosmic laws or the teachings of the Buddha. And it can mean the physical stuff of the universe itself, the kind of matter of the universe. And Dogen is famous for his radical and innovative use of words and phrases. So in this case, I think Dogen is using dharma to refer to the total reality of life as we experience. the total reality of life as we experience it. Free from our judgments, evaluations, imaginations. So viewed from this perspective, wholesome and unwholesome actions, good and evil, have a kind of equal significance in our lives. We get a sense, I think, when we sit in Zazen, that what we might label wholesome or unwholesome thoughts that arise and disappear, they just come and go. Right? We don't really have to label them. We might feel like, ugh, but we don't have to like engage in them. And when we don't engage with them, we see clearly they are just part of the geography of our life. They come and they go. I think in this passage, when Dogen says, you know, all-inclusive, Dogen is telling us that what we call unwholesome or evil is not external or separate from who and what we are. Since his treatment of evil is not limited to what we may call ethical issues, but extends to this worldwide view, an opening to the limitless reality of all things. Dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. There is a place where we hold it all, not making distinctions. And there's a reason why that place is vital for our practice, which we'll talk about more in a moment. But let's pause for a moment and just kind of take this in. Dogen is telling us, I think, here, there is no good and evil. There is only what is. There is the reality of life. The terrible and horrendous events happening in the world. The painful and unjust sufferings in our lives are all-inclusive. They are Dharma. They are part of reality that is beyond our division of the sacred and the profane. This is what should be, this is what should not be. And perhaps another way to put this is that Dharma, the reality of our life, is more fundamental than good and evil, wholesome and unwholesome. As Dharma is all-inclusive, you are all-inclusive. Now, hearing this, maybe you feel the urge to push this away. Or maybe the kind of specter of hopelessness is arising, approaching, right? But here's a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Russian novelist, philosopher, and political prisoner. He wrote this: "If there were only evil people somewhere, insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them, but the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?" So let me ask you, if you take this view that Dogen is presenting us to heart, that what is unwholesome or evil is not external or separate from who and what we are, how do you live your life? How do you live your life in this world? We'll unpack this a little bit more in a few moments.
Let me just go check the time here. I don't go too far off. Good grief. Okay, I've got to do this for this one next section at least. Okay. So it's going to be one more paragraph, and then we'll do something a little different here. Dogen writes, "When you listen, study, practice, and realize unsurpassable, complete enlightenment, it is deep, vast, and wondrous. You learn this unsurpassable enlightenment either by following a teacher or following a sutra. First, you understand it as refrain from unwholesome action. If you do not understand it as refrain from unwholesome action, it's not the true Buddha Dharma, but a speech of demons. Know that to understand unsurpassable enlightenment as refrain from unwholesome action is the true Buddha Dharma." So Dogen tells us, when we first hear this teaching, you know, refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action, we understand it in what we may call the worldly way. Don't hit other kids in the kindergarten. Don't take their toys. Don't lie about eating the cookies. Just behave politely. Don't cause other suffering, right? The kind of things we pick up. And in the Zen tradition, we must study, learn, and put into practice the precepts as best we can. Of course, we refrain from unwholesome action. But Dogen says this is only a partial and incomplete understanding of unwholesome action. He wrote, "Know that to understand unsurpassable enlightenment as refrain from unwholesome action is the true Buddha Dharma." Now, in our imaginations, we may picture unsurpassable enlightenment or awakening as some great bliss state that resolves all problems, as a state we strive for, somehow believing it to be somewhere in the future, hopefully not too far, but definitely in the future. But from Dogen's view, from the Soto Zen understanding, that's an error. Unsurpassable enlightenment, or Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, as it's known in the Sanskrit, is the puzzling and very paradoxical reality of our life. Each of us is both separate individuals and completely intimate or all-inclusive with all things. Both are present and true at the same moment. Remember the third line of that gatha that we read at the beginning, purify your own mind. The character for purify, chojo in Japanese, also means to clarify. So another meaning or suggestion may be to clarify our life, to clarify our mind, to see beyond our habitual view of ourselves as an independent self. So I'm going to pause here. And I'd like you to take a moment to write. I'm going to ask everyone to, right now, maybe just a list of words or maybe just a few sentences. We'll just take about 3 minutes. What is your understanding of evil? What is evil? How do you use the word if you do? Okay, thank you. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to try to put you into groups of three using the breakout rooms. And I'd like you to do two things. One, to just share with each other what your understanding of evil is and whether you use the word or not. And, you know, you can be fairly brief with this just to get a sense of what that word may mean to us these days. And then maybe a sentence or two, that if you do take to heart Dogen's understanding that the unwholesome or the evil is not external or separate, how do you live your life? What may that mean as to how you live your life in this world? Okay? So when you get into groups, just, you know, say your names to each other. You'll get an invite. Make sure you push or click the button to get back into your room. And we'll take... about 10 minutes to do this. So I'll try to get you into roughly groups of three. So each person will get 3 minutes to speak, and then we'll come back for a little bit.
I think remind them that it's listening.
And discussion. Yeah, and please just, you know, when you're someone else is speaking, just listen. When it's your turn, you'll speak, but don't necessarily refer to what other people have said. Just let this come directly from you and listen deeply to the other person. Oh no, okay, it's like this.
Are you
ready? So we'll have Kinhin in just a moment here. I know we're running perhaps a little bit behind our schedule. I talk too much, as usual. I wanted to ask, though, if you had any questions. I can maybe, you know, next 5 minutes or so, see if you have any questions or comments that you wanted to bring forward. And we'll have a more time also at the end of the talk this afternoon. Okay, Michelle, go ahead and unmute.
I don't have the verse on my screen in front of me, but where Dogen talks about wholesome and unwholesome is time. What does he mean by time?
That's a good question. Dogen has a very I think a very profound and intricate understanding of what time is. In that time is also all-inclusive. In other words, what we usually consider as past, present, and future being three separate senses of time, Dogen, particularly in his fascicle called Uji, or Time Being, pulls apart and says... time too is all inclusive. The past, present, and future are all present, but that doesn't make sense. They co-arise together, and so there again, he's emphasizing this all inclusive nature of reality. That we divide up into bits. So. Before we begin to divide everything up, everything is all-inclusive. And so again, this kind of paradox that we have to hold, that our life is both our individual life with individual things, and it is also a complete unity with everything else. Nothing stands outside. Nothing separate. Welcome. Hey, anyone else have a... Just kind of wave your hand so I can see. Oh, Is that Jess waving at me? Go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, this might be more of a comment, but just something I'm reflecting on is I just had such a strong reaction to the word evil. Like I was sharing with our group that it makes me think of like a Disney villain. It almost feels like it's not a word I use often. And thinking about, like I was like unwholesome action that I'm really comfortable with, but evil is like, it's quite triggering in a way. And I you may have mentioned this before, Michael, but were you saying that the word could be translated in different ways?
Yes, thanks, Jess. And I think maybe many people probably, agree with you that what you've said resonates with them. And certainly with me, too, I have to say. And the word is aku in Japanese. And yes, it can be translated in different ways. And evil is one way that the early translators used. And of course, they were Christian, English speaking. But unwholesome action... aku also can be translated as unwholesomeness, or that which is unwholesome, or that which is harmful is another way to translate aku. Kuya.
So when I was at Green Gulch, there was a monk there from Beiheiji. His name was Hakuzan. He said haku means broom. Is it a different ideograph?
What did his character haku?
Broom.
Broom.
He said broom to sweep away, like purify.
Oh, broom. Yes. Yeah. So it's a different character. Same pronunciation, but different character.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Is that? Oh, Augusta, and then we'll do our Kinhin.
Yeah. In thinking about evil, it seemed to me that we all cause disturbance just in living. And so if you look depending on their perspective, some would call what you've done evil and others might not, or an animal might consider it evil from their perspective. So where do you draw the line?
Mm. Well, thank you, Augusta. It's, again, a very good point. And Dogen and the text himself says, as we just read, at one time, what is considered unwholesome at another time is considered wholesome, right? He points out that the very truth, I think, of Augusta, what you just said. How do we draw a line? Well, Dogen doesn't give us, unfortunately, a line anywhere. But as we'll see, as we read a little bit more of this text, he really encourages us to look deeply beyond our assumptions and beyond our habitual ways. I think he actually encourages us to consider the evil that we don't see, the evil that comes out of our social structures, our institutions, that we assume that's just the way it is. We just assume that's the way it is. That then the way to do that, as we read in the text, is letting go of what we think is evil and good. We have to step back from that. And just, one crude example that appears to me is this whole, the question of slavery. For a period of time, there were groups of people who considered slavery was actually fine. Not only fine, but good. Because you're bringing benefit to, uncivilized or people who weren't intellectually capable of expressing themselves and living a good life, etc. So, thank you for those questions. Very profound and something we need to really hold and look at closely, and which we'll continue to do. But now we'll have a kinhin, and then we'll sit for a little bit. And then we'll have service at 11:50. So I'll let the Tenkins and Enos work that out. Thank you so much for listening. And